720 WGN, it is Dane here with you. Hi, atop Chicago in the Skyline Studio on Black Friday, and on the line with us, super excited to have award-winning, best-selling author, food and wine personality, entertainer, truly one of the leading voices in the wide world of wine. And of course, like any superhero, right, he has his own lair, calling us from the wine sanctuary, the one and only Mark Oldman. Mark, welcome to WGN.
Dane, I'm so happy to be back.
Well, I know so many listeners who are excited to have you back, not only because infinitely entertaining and you always bring that approachability to the world of wine, the oftentimes pretentious world of wine, but now is a time we don't even just want you. We really need you, right? Because we're heading into that holiday season, got so many things to celebrate, and we want to have the right beverages to go along with all that food.
I'm your man because I've been drinking. I mean, I think so many of us have been drinking plentifully or abundantly during these isolating times, but I especially have been focusing, and I've got lots of good picks to tell you about.
Is there anything, and you have had your hand on the pulse of the wine world, not only with the books, but all of the events and sharing that information for many, many years. This has been an interesting year where people have been, whether it's sequestered and had an opportunity to maybe get into more of the quantity side of drinking than maybe they would in the past, but also I'm sure exploring and finding new and different things to go ahead and try out. As you have taken your journey from global to more kind of intergalactic with the web and all that exploration, are there things that are like maybe new tips, trends, or things that are out there now people should check out?
Definitely. Well, you know, some of the trends are people are finding it a little easier to go slightly out of their comfort zone. So I'm not telling anyone to, you know, drink orange wine unless they really want to, or natural wine unless they really, really want to. And most wine is pretty natural. That's a trend we could talk about in detail at some point. But the real value, the real deliciousness at good price points tends to be from places like South America, places that are just a little further out from where, you know, the normal Napa and Sonoma and a lot of California regions. I mean, one good example is I have recently rediscovered a grape called Carmenere from Chile. That's almost like Chile's own grape. I think it's Carmenere. So go to your local wine shop. Because I really like wine that's reliable and wine where you don't necessarily have to have an exact producer and exact year. But I'll tell you, Dane, I had one last night for Thanksgiving, and it's often like $15, no more than $15. I think last night I had the La Postelle Cuvée Alexandra Carmenere. But this is kind of what so many of us want in a wine. The medium to full-bodied, red, intense, has that kind of blackcurrant, smoke, mint thing going on. But it's not too heavy, and yet it's a rich, concentrated red wine that really, now that with winter kind of ramping up, and especially I heard the forecast, Jess, I was waiting to talk to you, you know, getting into the 20s of the Chicago area. We all need to be warmed up by red wine, and a red wine that's not too expensive. So go to your local wine shop, ask for the Chilean Carmenere. I'm now obsessed again with it. So that's one example.
You want to impress some people at the local place, you ask for the Chilean Carmenere, and I think instantly some street cred will be imparted upon you, even if those are the only two words that you know. Let the listeners know we're talking with Mark Oldman. One of your most recent award-winning and acclaimed books, Drink Like a Billionaire, and you are every bit of that. And for let the listeners know, the exclusive events like the Classic at Aspen for food and wine, you know, he is a headliner, sold out in a bunch of different ways, and the familiarity with the upper and elevated levels of the wine world is certainly there. But you always do try to think about, you know, not only make it approachable for people to able to have those conversations, but also you're always giving out values, you know, where maybe some unexpected finds on the wine world that are great, but also super affordable.
You know, that's such a good point, and I'm glad you recognize that, because when you're in the wine world like I am, you often get pegged as either the snob or the person who only drinks, you know, two-buck chuck. And those aren't too many of the wine experts, but there are some out there, or certain bloggers that focus on the tiny or the least expensive wine. I like to toggle between both worlds, because, or at least the very gently priced, we're talking $10 wines, because that's what I'm drinking on a Tuesday night. And when I'm paying for it, I'm usually extremely cost conscious. And also, you mentioned my most recent book, How to Drink Like a Billionaire. One of my central points is you don't have to spend a lot to get great deliciousness in wine. Often we spend a lot because of other reasons, because of the winery. They maybe want you to perceive the wine as more valuable, or it's a rare bottle and you're paying more for the rarity than the deliciousness. You know, you made me think of another wine, and that is South America, Argentina, a $10 wine, La Tremenda. Very easy to remember. It's the winery is Enrique Mendoza. But I had this last week. It's $10. And, you know, again, red, medium to full bodied, that kind of cranberry, that cocoa thing. It's what everyone wants. And maybe certain wine stores don't want you to know about it because they're not going to make that much from it. But as you're suggesting, I like to drive people to that promised land of deliciousness, whether it's the Dom Perignon or it's something much more humble.
Yeah, well, those guys, you know, they actually paid attention during their marketing classes in high school. Oftentimes, and you and I have talked about wines that are great, but maybe have terrible names that are unpronounceable, and maybe it sets them back. But La Tremenda, that's that seems to work, right? Maybe it's a little bit of extra pressure, right? It certainly is high praise built into the names. When it comes to, you mentioned, go down to your local wine store in a lot of different ways. And here in Chicago, I think we're back to phase, whatever the restrictive phase is, and a lot of the things aren't necessarily available. But just as you have become more accessible in a bunch of different ways online, and after our break, we're going to talk more about all the virtual ways that Mark Oldman is out there. But has that allowed people over the course of 2020 to really kind of dial in their ability to tap into the wines of the world, because so much more is available, right, for delivery?
It really is. There's this kind of brave new world opened up to people. And, you know, the world's seemingly exotic wines, whether from New Zealand or even places like Slovenia, they are a finger tap on your keyboard away now. And it's getting easier and easier to get wine shipped to you. You know, I just saw a report on the wine industry, and one of the big categories to take off is direct from the winery wine. So you're seeing laws loosen and the ability to, I've worked with, for example, Stagsleep Wine Cellars. I did a virtual tasting with them 2 weeks ago, and people were able to order the wines directly from the winery and kind of cut out the middleman and cut down on the shipping time. So people are finding it easier and easier. And while restaurants, sadly, and it just breaks my heart, are having a lot of trouble during COVID, the bright spot is in the retail and the winery sector, where, you know, people are stuck at home and they're using the internet to source these really good and diverse wines from both around the country and around the world.
Yeah, you're looking at that. We're going to take a break, and we come back. We're going to talk a little bit about Mark Oldman, who has, as often as his shows are sold out in person, and they will be again in 2020, he is bringing the people what they want and what they need, which is virtual Mark Oldman and some and some of these great wines, some of the celebrity wines. He is a celebrity, bringing in the celebrities that are having wines as well. And we'll talk a little bit about the marketing now, where those regions are able to kind of tap in to really what's happening now instead of having all these marketing plans. So we'll see. Maybe we can even do a little think tank. And for the orange wines, maybe it's not just for breakfast anymore. Resurrect that one. So keep it here. We'll be back with Mark Oldman. It's Dane on 720 WGN. WGN, it is Dane here with you again, high atop Chicago Skyline Studio on Black Friday, and continuing our conversation with the one and only Mark Oldman, and a guy that knows how to break all the rules. He knows all the rules he can break. And when it comes to wine on the entertainment side, the pretension out, the cool factor is in. And for all those people that know and love and appreciate what it is that you do, certainly the books are there. Go out and get them, How to Drink Like a Billionaire. But when it comes to the events, that is a thing that everybody, and you and I are part of and cover. And of course, you're a headliner in so many of those different food events. We have not had them for the vast most part and majority in 2020. And so again, here's where you're there and doing the R&D, putting on the lab coat and coming up with a way to get out there and share not only the education side, but the entertainment side of wine. It's been great. Let's talk a little bit about how Mark Oldman has gone virtual in 2020.
I love that image, doing the R&D, the lab coat. Yes, my lab coat has been on, my microscope and my wine opener and my champagne saber. We have all the yes. tools in this lab. But no, it's been great fun, and I am so thankful for the amazing reaction. Most of my virtual events are free to the public, and I do every conceivable wine topic, and often they're focused on very affordable wines, wines that you can easily find, easily afford, but are uncommonly delicious. So, you know, it's funny. Everyone talks about Zoom fatigue and the limitations of the online format, but there are certain trade-offs, and there are certain advantages to it. I mean, the fact that we can all be in our underwear, you know, down below. I don't want to get too graphic. I don't want to pull a tube in here, but so to speak. No, the fact that we can all kind of relax, and you know, there are advantages to Zoom. Like, for example, I'll often poll the audience. I'll say, which wine did you find the best? And this will reveal not just my likes and dislikes, but we kind of crowdsource which are the best wines. And that's tremendously helpful for people when they're going to their wine stores or if they're possibly sitting outside at restaurants. I know that's probably not happening too much in Chicago, but so the online format has actually been a pretty positive thing, but you have to know how to zest it up and make it interesting. You can't call it in.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You know, you got it. Well, see, but that's always been your strong suit, is you're able to be nimble and conversational, and it isn't like a set format right. with a script. You're able to take whatever questions thoughtfully, kind of process that and share some insights on it as well. We've got a couple more minutes, and I wanted to, and we're going to get all the information about the website and where people can go, but one of the things that has brought a lot of extra attention, it's got to be very cool. Certainly, you know, accolades all over the place, but to kind of transcend into the territory where on the Tonight Show, Jimmy Fallon is talking about you and the celebrity war of the wines that you've been doing, along with Sting. How crazy is that? And then talk a little bit about some of the things that you've done on the celebrity side. It's been awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. And I love that. I'm a big Police fan. And by the way, for your listeners, I can't, even if I wanted to, and I never would want to, but I can't nudge the results of the survey. On Zoom, the host can't vote. It's just the way it is. So Sting won our red wine competition, and as you mentioned, he went on Jimmy Fallon and, I guess, cutely crowed about it to Jimmy Fallon. So, yeah, we've got our first accolade. So he was very proud of the fact that the crowd voted him number one in this last celebrity wine tasting. Before that, Christie Brinkley, people don't realize she has a bubbly out there. She has a sparkling wine. not expensive, and it's absolutely delicious. She was delirious that it came in number one. Carmen Diaz, unfortunately, didn't do as well, and I think the crowd, or Cameron Diaz, I should say, and unfortunately didn't do as well because she advertises a clean wine, and I think the crowd responded not so much to the taste of the wine, but when you call your wine clean, it might suggest that all other wines are somehow not clean or impure. So I think so when people do vote on these celebrity wines, it's not just the taste of the wine, but it's kind of how it's packaged and just everything else surrounding the wine. But it's been great fun, and I have a new celebrity tasting coming up that anyone can join. Again, it's free to sign up at markoldman.com. And we've got a really cool all-star cast. We've got good old Snake Plissken, Kurt Russell himself with his amazing wine. And we've got, I brought Sting back to see if one of his more expensive wines can do as well as his Roxanne, which is what was the number one wine before. We've got John Legend. His wine, his LVE Cabernet. We've got Yao Ming, 7-foot Yao Ming, who's doing amazing things in Napa. So it's going to be a death match of these celebrity wines, and that happens, I believe, on December 9th, around 7 p.m. Central Time.
We will have links up at WGNRadio.com for that. An eclectic blend, as it always is, of personalities, celebrities, and their offerings to the wine world. And it's great to see it being as received on that end of it in the greater wine world, and just celebrities and all that, as it is from all of your kind of normal fans within the wine world and the food and wine world and all of those fans you've had for so long, especially to the books as well. Last thing, as we let you go, is the website where people can go get more information. Again, we'll have links at WGNRadio.com. But Mark, what's the website where people can follow your adventures?
Sure. It's just markoldman.com, markoldman.com.
The best in the business, is one of the leading voices in the wine world. Mark, get back to your holiday weekend. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
Dane, you are the best in the business, and thanks so much. It's a great pleasure.
All right. Quick break. When we come back, we are going to have, I think it's going to be Jerry James Stone calling us. So keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN. Yes. 720 WGN, it is Dane here with you, high atop Chicago Skyline Studio, and excited to have on the line with us a guy who is, and not everybody can have this on their business card, in fact, almost no one, YouTube superstar. He is a culinary personality, he is an author, he is a content creator, trusted source for all things fun, delicious, and on the vegetarian side as well, the one and only Jerry James Stone. Welcome to WGN.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have us. So you're out in California. We've got, it's not a terrible day. I think it's sunny, but maybe, I don't know if it's 20 or 30 degrees. It's not that warm. You're calling us from California, and oftentimes what we will do when we have somebody from a warm weather locale and a trusted friend, you know, we will live vicariously through you on the weather side. So give us, we know that the outer world on the pandemic side can be challenging, but weather-wise, how is it out there in California?
It's not too bad. Yeah, I'm in Sacramento, California. Right now we're in the mid-50s. It's, you know, a little crisp, but it's a clear day. We had some rain a few weeks ago, but right now it's sunny and crisp, which is, for me, my perfect weather. I love it. A little cold, but sunny.
Little cold, but sunny. That's not your personality, though. You're always warm and inviting in so many different ways. And this is, you know, Friday. It is Black Friday. We're going to talk about some different ways on the holiday side, some different selections and dishes that you may want to suggest. Certainly people will be able to check out all the stuff that you have online. But the day after Thanksgiving, and I always say Thanksgiving, everybody makes a lot of food, or as best, you know, if you have it available, sometimes people overdo it on the food side. And then it lasts throughout the course of the weekend. So for a Jerry James Stone, what did you have yesterday for Thanksgiving, and what are you looking forward to digging into all weekend?
Well, you know, I have to say we actually cheated this year. So my family, you know, we all kind of been dealing with the pandemic stuff, dealing with, you know, people shuffling around, and just various other things. So this year we just did takeout. Like, we were very, very lazy and decided that we were going to do like a full meal. I know, right? Dude. It was like, we went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and we just landed on takeout. I was like, okay, so we just watched movies and had takeout. It was actually kind of nice. I mean, I was like, okay, we have to have a Thanksgiving meal still, so like we're still gonna make that happen. We just had, you know, the logistics of planning to get together has just been so difficult during this time, and everyone's trying to be safe, and we have a lot of older people in our family, so we're trying to be extra cautious because they're like 80 years and up, and so, you know, we're just really trying to be as safe as possible. So every time we try to plan for a meal, it just didn't make sense because there's only a couple of us, you know, and so we cheated. We just ordered takeout, and I'm embarrassed to admit that, but it's true.
Don't be embarrassed. You know what, I see that when I first heard it, of course I was taken aback a little bit, but then I think to myself, that is so Jerry James Stone. That is a power move when you can just decide, yes, I am known as a culinary individual, juggernaut, superstar. Sure, and there's a lot of pressure on these food holidays to get out there, deliver, to do something, but you know what, I'm content and satisfied with the legacy that I have out there, and I don't want to feel pressured by a calendar to decide what you're going to do. We had, so yesterday, you know, Tyler Florence and Duff Goldman and some good friends, and if they only had the courage to go ahead and say, you know what, I don't have anything to share, we just ordered some takeout, boom. That's a mic drop for Jerry James Stone.
Well, you know, I mean, and the other part of it too, you know, we were kind of, as we were sort of discussing it, it was like, you know, we wanted to be together. And that was the main goal, right? That's the main thing for Thanksgiving. It's, you know, I think oftentimes people get so overwhelmed with what they're making and whatnot that we just wanted to like be together in the best way possible that was safe for everyone. And, you know, restaurants are struggling. You know, they're in a really hard space right now. So I was just kind of like, I'm like, let's throw some money towards some of our favorite restaurants. We got it. Takeout from a few different places. Everyone got their favorite thing, and I actually felt pretty good about it. You know,
that is awesome. Then you build in this higher purpose into it all too, because you're making the world a better place on the restaurant side, and of course on the economy side. Well played, Jerry. For those people that are your fans and love what it is that you do, and to let the listeners know, we're talking with Jerry James Stone. Is you always have a really kind of innovative take on things. You've always got some really cool, fun ways to either look at things, to either make and prepare things, and certainly to enjoy things. So when it comes to the holidays and kind of putting your own spin on it, what are some things that either you're doing, have featured recently on the channel, or looking forward to kind of presenting to people for the rest of 2020?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely love to kind of look at different ways to kind of architect food. That's one of my favorite things that you kind of pointed out. And, you know, so that when we do finally get together and have our Thanksgiving meal, one of my favorites to make is I make these stuffed Brussels sprouts. It's a great appetizer. They're kind of like stuffed mushrooms, but, you know, I've had them be something that people who are cautious or maybe Brussels sprout curious, but not sure they want to, like, they just, you know, they're like cabbages, right? So they're like, I don't know. They're a great little appetizer, and you kind of feel a little bit like you're eating something healthy, even though they're kind of stuffed with ricotta and garlic and all these herbs. And then, you know, another favorite of mine, I make this like cranberry white cheddar dip that is just, I have fans reach out to me every year. They're like, this is a staple in our household now. It's a real easy appetizer. So those are a couple of my favorites to start with. And then one of the things I really love is just kind of flipping the script on stuff a little bit. So, you know, having sweet potatoes that are just, you know, doused in like marshmallows is just a, you know, constant staple in so many households. But I have this one where, you know, I kind of do a Hasselback sweet potato in a bourbon sauce that I then put like marshmallow fluff over, and then brulee. So like it's just kind of that same sort of flavor profile, but you get this whole other experience because it's a Hasselback potato, and it's not just like, you know, mashed potatoes, but it's actually kind of a fun little, has a great presentation. That bourbon sauce is, you know, just addictive as heck. And so I love stuff like that, like kind of taking those flavor things that people are really used to and kind of just re-architecting them in a way that makes it a little bit more interesting. on.
Well, you're always, I think, caring and considerate too, and you always, it's really neat to be able to take stuff that people are already used to, they're already in that team photo of things that people love, and then kind of elevating them or taking a little bit of a left or right turn and kind of changing the way that people can enjoy them, maybe to add another twist that someone can build, like you said, into their regular, okay, this is the way that we do it, and you're giving people those gifts. The other thing I mentioned on the compassion side, there are so many, whether it's vegetables, and I, you know, you have to give a little criticism, even though we don't necessarily like to do that, to whether it's the Visitor Tourism Bureau or the big Brussels sprout lobby, the people that aren't doing their job to make these things cool. And sometimes, you know, you come to the rescue, Jerry James Stone will ride in and help make the Brussels sprouts, you know, a little less lonely, or beets, right? You love beets and you're always kind of bringing beets. These are things that people have heard of, but you're kind of trying to make them hip and cool again.
Yeah, I have this. In fact, you brought up, you just reminded me of another favorite of mine. I have these roasted red beets. It also really works well with chioga beets. I highly recommend that, Vital, if you have access to that. But it's a roasted beet that I do in a balsamic and chocolate sauce. And so it's kind of a sweet dish, even though it's savory. And, you know, I mean, like the beets just, I mean, they really do complement the, you know, beet sugar. Obviously, it really complements those sweeter things. So you kind of get a little bit of a sweetness to it. You know, which is another great way to expose people, I think, to beets who don't like beets, because, you know, I mean, it takes kind of educating your palate into those things, you know, and so, you know.
are there any things there on the horizon? Maybe those different vegetables have reached out to you for the Jerry James Stone makeover, right? Maybe the rutabaga or the turnip or something have said, like, hey, you know, kind of work with us and kind of bring us to popularity.
I've kind of been digging into these California commodities recently, because the one thing about being in California is we're sort of, I mean, we kind of have this bread bowl type of thing here. You know, we grow 40% of the produce, fresh fruit and veggies that actually are grown and feed, like, you know, the whole nation, right? We grow 40% of that. And so Digging into the things here that we grow and produce and that maybe don't quite have the spotlight. So one of the things I'm exploring right now is actually California prunes. I really want to do some fun things with prunes, because I feel like those are also, like, those are just sort of seen as something that senior citizens eat. Yes. And I want to, like, get them outside of that, you know?
They're typecasted and not in the most, certainly in a functional, practical, therapeutic, maybe would be a word to use, way, but they aren't necessarily, there's no cool factor with the prunes. I wanted to ask you too, is this is a thing that you have been doing for a long time. You don't achieve the rank of YouTube superstar just come into this as a Johnny Come Lately. You have been there for a long time doing that. I think throughout the course of 2020, circumstances and challenges out there in the real world have dovetailed with what it is that you're doing. Talk about the channel, and I know that it has grown, and there's been just more of I think a desire and interest, maybe even a need for what it is that you've been doing on that channel throughout the course of the pandemic.
You know, I mean, like, one of the things that's been really important to me is I'm a problem solver by heart. So before I got into food, I was a software engineer. And so, you know, like, for me, like, I always look at, like, how I can help people solve problems. And so I try not to be snobby about food. I try not to be too much of a foodie, because I know that, like, I don't want to turn people away from things that they like to eat, because all I care about is, are they cooking? And so, you know, I've been doing my YouTube channel for about 8 years. And, you know, early on, I saw people were really trying to figure out how to store food, how to make things last longer. And so I did a lot of videos around that. And at the beginning of this pandemic, it just blew up, because people who had never really cooked before were all of a sudden forced to cook, because one, either their restaurants that they went to were closed down, or they couldn't leave the house, or it wasn't safe for them. They didn't feel like it would be safe for them to leave the house. They were trying to go to the grocery store less. And so they were really looking how to make food last. And, you know, those food storage videos that I have on my YouTube channel have really been a lifesaver for people, because it took things that were lasting maybe a couple of days to lasting a couple of weeks. And that to me is really important, not just from helping people. I mean, I'm very thankful, and I feel very honored to be able to help people solve those problems. But it's also, I mean, food waste. You know, we throw out like 40% of what we grow in this country, you know, so there's a big food waste issue that we also have to deal with. And that costs us money and time and labor and all sorts of other things. It's an impact on the environment. So, you know, helping people solve these problems, it only helps them save money. It helps them have fresh food at home. So I really love being a part of that narrative for them.
Yep. And we're going to have links up at WGNradio.com for all of that stuff. We're going to take a break and we come back. You know, not everybody, very few people get to be a YouTube superstar, and even fewer, I'm thinking, actually create publish their own comic book. And so building in more of the entertainment, almost pure entertainment, I'm sure, circling around maybe the food universe as well. We're going to talk with Jerry Jamestown about his new comic book, Spooniverse, when we come back. So keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane here with you on Black Friday high atop Chicago Skyline Studio, and continuing our conversation with the one and only Jerry Jamestown. You know him as a YouTube superstar. You know him as an ambassador for maybe some of the more forgotten and less appreciated fruits and vegetables out there, always putting his unique and delicious spin on things. And he has transcended into a new territory now on the content and the creation side. When we first heard about this, we went back and forth, and I had suggested, just as he has given new life and is about to for prunes and for beets, is that the Fruit of the Loom guys really haven't had a lot of work. And they may, you know, when it comes to a superhero perspective, you know, sort of like a, I don't know, a culinary Justice League, maybe those guys, yeah, and if they have to be villains, I think they'd be open to it, right? Because times have been tough. And so, Jerry, welcome back, number one. And then also, let's talk about this. Not everybody, at least everyone I know, and as a kid, absolutely loved comic books. To be able to kind of create one and then make it a real thing, that's got to be exciting.
You know, I've been working on it for 3 years. It feels longer. It's been, you know, I mean, I've never created a comic book before. I've never written a script for a comic book before. And, you know, comics are like, you know, it's an 80-year-old history. So trying to create something that is fresh and new and doesn't feel completely derivative was much more challenging than I thought it would be. And I, you know, but it is. It's a lot of fun, and I'm really super excited for it.
Did you follow the format of comic books that we kind of know and love, just so it sort of walks like the duck that people are used to, and, you know, where you've got, you know, the different characters and then the thought bubbles and maybe some fights and some pows and some bangs and some other things, especially when it comes to comic books that are centered around superheroes? Or did you say, well, let's try maybe in that format, but maybe do some different things? How did that whole creative process work?
No, this one was really just how you mentioned, kind of baked into that classic like superhero thing. Basically, what I grew up with. So I'm, you know, I'm a child of the '80s, and so I really like kind of went into that sort of '80s comic book hero genre. So a lot of like the way the costumes are designed, a lot of the art, even like, you know, the spaceships, like everything sort of has that kind of feel to it. And I really wanted to create something, because I loved comics growing up, and it, just like you, and I wanted something that kids could kind of get into and appreciate the story and have a lot of fun with, and then sort of just get exposed to these narratives that are really important when it comes to food. And you understand that too, you know, just being in a space that you're in, you understand how climate change is affecting our food system, how industrial ag affects our food system, the choices that we make from energy to water to whatever, it all affects our food system. You know, and I wanted to like bring those stories in a fun, kind of fresh way without it being really heavy handed, sort of having, you know, adding some superheroes, kind of in the same way that Star Wars sort of has like the Nazi thing going with like stormtroopers. I wanted to like do that. You know, it's like, how can I make these things that are really important fun for kids so they get exposed to it in a way that, you know, they haven't yet?
I don't know if everyone is aware. I guess maybe they are, that Star Wars has it. I'm doing the air quotes now, has that Nazi thing. But you know what? There are a lot of parallels to be built in. And, you know, that kind of eternal struggle between good and evil. So kind of share the idea and sort of the plot with it. I know it maybe changes from issue to issue, but it's called Spooniverse, right? And is there like a central hero or maybe a central villain, or does it kind of change up? How does it work?
It's kind of funny, because sometimes I tend to take on more things more than I can maybe handle, and I don't know why, but for some reason I decided to go really big, and I kind of created this team of 7 characters.
Nice.
I probably should have just done 1 character. It would have been a lot easier, but I went for 7, and, you know, basically it's like 50 years in the future. All the worst things that we fear about climate change and all that stuff has sort of come to pass. The world itself is vegan, because there's just not enough resources to make anything that's not vegan.
Ugh.
And so basically,
I'm sure there's a lot of cows out there that would be happy to hear that. The future looks bright.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, so basically it's in the future, and basically there's this kind of food crisis. And the part that's actually been challenging about it is I have this, and it, you know, it's hard at this time, but I have this virus that's basically killing off all this stuff, and, you know, which feels very now, right? And so I'm trying to, like, I've had to, like, kind of go back and do a little rewriting on some things to be a little bit more sensitive to the times that everyone is dealing with. But the goal is to kind of have this, like, kind of future story where this group of heroes goes on this galactic adventure looking for food and kind of what that means, you know, and every capacity, like what it means from, you know, immigrant rights, what it means from how we treat the earth, like what it means from, like, food security and nutrition and all those things. And so it's really kind of exploring all of those things that are really important to the food community, but in a fun, like, superhero way with, like, you know, tights and capes and stuff.
Yes, tights and capes. Yeah. So you end up, you read it, you're informed, but you get that kind of a little bit of those teachable moments on some of those issues, whether they're environmental, educational, political, current events, and things like that. I think that sounds really cool. And this comes in a digital version, and I think I saw, is it going to come in an actual, not that it's even necessary these days, but is there going to be a physical comic book as well?
You know, originally I was going to make it digital only, and I'll share this story with you that will probably make you feel, I felt 8,000 years old as soon as I had, like, discovered this, but I was talking to a bunch of kids. I've kind of been sharing the artwork and the story with, like, my friends who have kids that kind of just bounce off them and see what they think. And I originally was going to do completely digital, and all of the kids were like, no, we want print. And I was kind of a little dumbfounded by that, because I was thinking, these people grew up with iPads. Like, why do they want print? And I asked them, and they were like, oh, it's so retro. And I felt so old at that point that I was like, okay, let me go get my walker, and I'll be right back. You know, it's just like,
no, think about it like that, yeah. Jerry. Think about it more as, like, you need something for those at those events, something for you to sign. And you're going to have the physical, right. The physical comic book for you to sign. Last thing, and we want to get, of course, the website and the online presence so people can keep up with all your adventures and, so, of course, participate. But are you going to do any product placement in there too? Maybe somebody, you know, one of the superheroes will have, you know, a use for prunes, and not maybe for some of the aged reasons, or maybe other, maybe working on some of your recipes. Are you going to build any product placement into Spooniverse?
Yeah, actually, it's definitely open to that. So included in each comic book, along with, like, the narrative around food, there's actually kid-friendly recipes that they can do on their own or with their, you know, parents. There's actually food storage tips. So I really want to educate kids. I mean, you understand this from having, you know, an audience yourself around being a radio host, that you kind of learn what people are looking for. And as I did those early food storage things and early cooking tips, I discovered, okay, people want this stuff. So how can I reach them younger and get them educated on this stuff earlier? And so a big part of the comic book is to include that sort of thing. So it has a little bit of a cookbook element. It's not just the straight narrative, but it's mostly a comic book. And this first one, actually, has a partnership with California Grown, which works with all of the commodity boards here in California. So there's definitely opportunities to have other products and other things in there. It's just really about, like, I just really want to help kids enjoy food and understand food in a really, you know, neat way.
Making the world, making the world a better place, a tastier place, and we're up against the break. So go ahead, Jerry, give us the website really quick where people can, you know, get on board. Of course, we'll have links at WGNradio.com as well.
Go to SpooniverseComics.com. You can purchase a digital version or a printed version. You can also buy the whole first season. So each comic book, the whole story arc for a season is over 3 books. So you can buy the first season in advance there too. But you can get both digital and print versions at SpooniverseComics.com.
Jerry James Stone, our own real-life hero, thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
All right, quick break. We'll be back. It's Dane, 720 WGN.